Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight Latino Voices. I'm Joanna Hernandez. Here's what we're looking at. President-elect Trump is threatening to carry out mass deportations in his second term. How local attorneys and community advocates are preparing. A railway in Pilsen may be getting a new life, but some residents are raising concerns over gentrification.
There's an implicit threat that your car will pay the price.
And now that the first snow of the season is here, a look at the history of Chicago's parking spot saving tradition, dibs. And now to some of today's top stories. In a surprising development, the Illinois Supreme Court is tossing out Jesse Smollett's convictions for staging a hate crime hoax against himself. The court sided with Smollett's attorneys, who argued the actor should never have faced the charges he was convicted of because of an earlier agreement he reached with the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. Smollett was initially charged for faking a hate crime and lying to authorities about it, but those charges were dropped by Fox's office in exchange for his $10,000 bond in community service. But a special prosecutor filed renewed charges against Smollett, and he was convicted in 2021. Smollett attorneys shared their reaction this afternoon to the court's decision.
Prosecutions should be based on facts. Prosecutions should not be based on vindictiveness. This was a vindictive persecution, not a prosecution. Let's not make any mistake about that. The emotion I would describe is one of relief, and he's very happy and, of course, grateful to the Supreme Court for their decision and for, you know, not to be condescending in any way, doing the right thing.
Chicago's Department of Streets and Sanitation has extended the street sweeping season by 1 week. But don't worry, you won't be ticketed if you forget to move your car. According to a department spokeswoman, the last round of street sweeping will be conducted on November 29th, the day after Thanksgiving. Keep in mind, though, that street sweepers are not equipped to pick up leaves, so refrain from pushing piles of leaves from your lawn to the curb. For advice on how to deal with your leaves, check out our website. And today, Chicago experienced its first snowfall of the season, covering the city in a white blanket. The morning began with heavy snow combined with wind and winter advisories for commuters. According to the National Weather Service, O'Hare Airport recorded 2.7 inches of snow. And while the snow may have messed up your morning commute, some of the animals at Brookfield Zoo were enjoying the fresh snowfall. Polar bear Hudson and brown bears Tim and Jess look like they enjoyed their snow day. How cute are they? Up next, how advocates for migrants are bracing for a second term at second Trump administration. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
Attorneys and community advocates are bracing themselves for a second Donald Trump presidency. The president-elect says he'll carry out the largest deportation operations in U.S. history, even promising to use the military to help that effort. Trump's claims that he plans to target sanctuary states and cities are causing anxiety and even panic. Here with more on how local groups are preparing are Carla Casas, attorney with Casas Immigration, and Nubia Willman, chief programs officer of Latinos Progresando. And on Zoom, Jose Vera, Executive Director of Southwest Suburban Immigrant Project. Thank you all for joining. Carla, I want to start with you. What has it been like? Have you seen an influx of calls of people calling you and trying to figure out what they should do? What does that look like?
We've definitely heard from a lot of our clients that, of course, are worried. How is this going to impact their case? What they should expect? So we definitely have seen that, and we were expecting it. So we've been prepared. I've made videos for my clients, just kind of letting them know these are the things that, you know, that may happen. At the same time, we don't know until we know.
And how are you preparing them? What does that look like? What's the advice you give them right now?
It depends on the type of case they have. There are certain things that are more in danger, that are easier for the Trump administration to get rid of. Things that are not in law, right? Things that are under executive order. So I've been, you know, analyzing all of our cases to see which situations are more at risk. And with those clients, we want to kind of act quickly.
So you're bracing yourself.
Yes.
Nubia, going to you, we've seen a Trump administration before. Mm-hmm. What are your organization's takeaways from 2016 that it is using to prepare?
Well, we're using the lessons learned in 2016 to make sure that we have a community response plan. And so there's lots of folks on the ground that are working to make sure communities are informed, that they know their rights, and that they're able to then connect with licensed attorneys and accredited DOJ reps so that they're able to file cases if necessary. And in any event, make sure they have all the documents that they need to prepare in case anything happens, if they do, in fact, have to have an interaction with ICE.
And as we know, former ICE Director Tom Homan, named as a border czar, says he intends to enforce strict deportation policies and specifically targeting St. Tree cities and mm-hmm. states. What does this mean for Illinois and Chicago, for people who are trying to understand?
Of course. And so we are a sanctuary. We're a welcoming state. We're a welcoming city. And there are federal laws that protect us with our due process and our rights. And so this is a moment for our government officials to underscore that they're going to follow the law, both through the Trust Act, our welcoming city ordinance, and that federal officials will also follow the law. Just because someone becomes president doesn't mean that the laws change. And so this is really a moment for us to say, we're going to defend our communities, we're going to defend our rights, and that's across the board for both immigrants and citizens that live in this country.
Have you also seen a panic among people?
There's definitely a concern. I think there's a little bit of a disconnect from 2016 because so many things were promised and didn't happen. But we are also entering a second administration, understanding that folks may now know which levers to pull to be a little bit more efficient, and so we want to be prepared.
And Jose, I want to bring you in. Your organization is currently putting together a Know Your Rights curriculum. What plans should families have in place if they are separated?
Yeah, so, you know, we want to make sure that we are acknowledging that there's real fear and anxiety amongst our community, but we're not powerless, right? And there are certain rights for everyone living in the U.S., especially here in the state of Illinois. We have built significant safeguards, so we want to make sure we're educating people on what those safeguards are around the Illinois Trust Act, making sure that, you know, folks understand that they don't have to open the door if a ICE agent knocks on their door. So we want to make sure that, you know, we're getting out and we're gearing up these presentations at our local churches, schools, to make sure that our community understands their rights.
And Carla, Trump has made claims that he plans to use the military to help execute his mass deportation plans. How probable is that?
I think that it's going to be logistically and legally very difficult for him to do that. We know that Trump tends to kind of throw out things, fly by the seat of his pants, in terms of doesn't think through always, right, logistically and legally. I think it would be very problematic. We have federal law that makes clear that the military is not to be used to enforce domestic laws domestically. So that would be the first issue. I think there would be a lot of lawsuits filed immediately if he were to do that. And then even logistically, money-wise, I mean, I've heard it's going to be in the billions of dollars to be able to do this. So even from that perspective, it would be very difficult to actually accomplish that.
And Carla, what impact does it have knowing that the Republican Party has control over the Senate and the House and the Supreme Court? Does that have an impact?
You know, we're still looking at, again, we have federal law. This has never happened before in our country. So even the Republicans that may be more willing to, you know, let's put some troops at the border. But now we would be talking about, you know, our military coming into our cities, into our towns, and enforcing immigration law, which they're not prepared to enforce because they're not trained to do that. So I think even though, you know, obviously they have a majority, I think even still it would be a very difficult sell. And, you know, Congress would have to act because we do have laws that make very clear that that's not something that can legally be done.
And Jose, how can people hold our government officials accountable to protect immigrants?
Yeah, so, you know, we encourage people to join community-based organizations. We know that here in the state of Illinois, the governor himself has said that he will stand, you know, and they will have to come through him in order to get to our community. So we're going to make sure that we hold them accountable to that, because we do need to make sure that our communities are protected.
And Nubia, there have been situations in the past where law enforcement agents executed workplace raids. Mm-hmm. Should we be concerned about this time around?
You know, what I think is important is that folks understand that though we're a welcoming city, welcoming state, the federal government still has jurisdiction to do their role, which includes doing raids if necessary, and really depends on the appetite of the federal administration as to when they do that. So we probably should anticipate or place raids and an increased presence of ICE as well if this goal of mass deportation is supposed to happen. And I do want to mention that in 70 years ago, we did see Operation Wetback. So there is some historical facts that this has happened before, but I do think that now that we're committed to really supporting immigrants in our community, we have to be responsive and be prepared for what may happen.
And Carla, why is it a cause for concern for everyone, not just immigrants?
I mean, I think, you know, this is going to affect on every level in our communities, right? If we have individuals that are in fear, that are, you know, it's our neighbors, it's our, you know, children in our schools, this is not an insulated issue. This is something that is going to impact in a large way, right? Everyone.
What are your thoughts on what you're saying?
I agree, and I think that's one of the things. I think it's very easy to disconnect yourself from this issue and think this is only going to impact the 500,000, half a million immigrant refugees that live in Chicago or that live throughout the state. But the idea is that when someone is being stopped and engaging with an ICE agent, they don't know if you're a citizen or not. And so we really have to think about, is this a space where we want to be, where we all are going to have to show our papers? Because that's the trajectory they're heading us towards if this comes into fruition.
So it affects different aspects of
Absolutely.
Different communities.
Mm-hmm.
And Jose, we hear a lot of conversation about the economic troubles we could face if Trump executes this mass deportation that he claims. What else is at stake?
So, you know, there's the real fear and anxiety, right? We work in our local school districts with parent mentors, and there's already, you know, conversations about, you know, parents sending their kids to school. So this is going to have a big impact, right? Not just economic. There's also the humanitarian side of it, and it's going to impact our entire community.
And Carla, we have time for one last question. Should people with green cards applying with citizenship continue that process?
Absolutely, after speaking with an attorney, because, you know, we have to remember that people with green cards, some of them may not, if they have certain criminal convictions, they have to be careful before applying. But those who are eligible, absolutely. This should not stop them. Nothing has changed right now. And that's what I keep reminding my clients in general. There's been a lot of threats that we're going to get rid of this or that. Right now, that has not happened. And so we want to take advantage of the options that we have right now.
So they should continue to push through.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
You.
Up next, an effort to repurpose an abandoned railway on the southwest side. Stay with us. An abandoned railway in Pilsen may be getting a new look. The proposed El Paseo Trail project has been stalled for several years. Now the city's transportation department is working with community members to transform the area. But some worry it will create some more gentrification and displacement in the largely Mexican-American neighborhood. Joining us now with more are DePaul University professor Winifred Curran, who studies the efforts, the effects of gentrification on the urban landscape, and Claudia Galeo Sanchez, a coordinator for Women for Green Spaces, and David Herrero, a lifelong Pilsen resident and former candidate for the alderman. We also invited the city's transportation department to send a representative, but they declined. Now, thank you all for joining us. Claudia, I want to start with you. For those who aren't familiar with that area, how would you describe it? The trail is a
project that the city is working on, and the problem we're having there is that we're worried about the trail.
But how does it look like right now?
Right now it's an abandoned place. Right now it's an abandoned place where they are having plans to restore, retake, and having some gardens, But right now there is not a lot going on.
Do you guys have a garden space near the trail?
No. We are looking for a garden space.
Okay.
We are looking for a garden space. We have our house is a butterfly sanctuary.
Oh,
exactly,
beautiful.
For this reason, because there is no other spaces. There is no spaces for green, for gardens. There is no spaces for vegetable gardens. And that's
so
why
that,
we
that would
started.
Be your vision. Your vision was to have a butterfly sanctuary and a place to garden, you would say.
Yes. Right now our house is a butterfly sanctuary, but we're looking for a space to have more trees, to have more native plants, and to keep going with our mission of saving the monarch butterfly.
And David, what are your thoughts on the vision for El Paseo? Do you agree that it should be built?
Yeah, it was part of the quality of life study in 2006 that UIC had said it would have improved the quality of life. And actually Pilsen historically has, not only is that area blighted because it's an old industrial corridor, but has the fewest amount of green space per capita, per person in the entire city because of the high density. Pilsen doesn't have outdoor parks like some of the other communities like Lincoln Park or Humboldt Park. So additional green space is definitely needed in that community, and this would provide essentially a trail, a bike trail, additional green space. There's ways to work with the community through community benefits agreement, where the community can have a say in how the development will take shape.
Are you worried about gentrification, or you think it makes a difference that people have an input this time?
I think there's a net benefit here. There's a net gain. Obviously, there's going to be an impact, and this was proposed about 20 years ago. It was halted by current alderman in 2022, so there hasn't really been much progress the last 2 years. But my preference would be that do we want all the growth and development to happen downtown, which is really the Manhattanization of the city, or do we want to spread the wealth and have development in our backyards? And that was part of kind of Lori Lightfoot's mandate, where it was invest southwest, right, in the south and western communities. So we kind of have this barbell effect where under Emanuel it was Manhattanizing high-rise development, and that really benefits wealthier pension fund investors. Or do we want your traditional 2, 3, and 4 flat communities to be, you know, having renovation in those communities, which provides opportunity for your local laborers, right?
So as
your
you mentioned,
carpenter.
You see this as an opportunity. Winifred, I want to bring you in. This project is over 10 years in the making. Several studies have examined how to best improve the area. How could a trail potentially impact gentrification and displacement in Pilsen?
Yeah, and that's, of course, the big fear, is that we already have in Chicago the example of the 606 trail, mm-hmm. of a trail that was put in place without considering the effect that it would have on affordability, and we saw a tremendous increase in housing values. DePaul's Institute for Housing Studies did a study on the effect, and housing values increased anywhere from 40-60%, even more. So that's the great fear.
Do you know when it comes to the 606 trail, did the people have input on
not
how as, it was
I mean
built?
Some on the design, but there definitely, and there were many people saying displacement is going to be an issue, and it wasn't really addressed by the city until after the fact. And of course, once people are displaced, it's much harder to get them to come back than it is to prevent that displacement in the first place. So with projects like this, the thing is not necessarily not to build, right? As David said, this is an area that absolutely needs green space. But how do we do it in a way that doesn't attract more real estate speculation?
And what would be your suggestion?
Well, I think we need to do it in partnership with very active policies around preserving affordable housing and creating more affordable housing. So there's an opportunity to do that right at the end of El Paseo at the 18th and Peoria site that the city purchased to be affordable housing. So that's still in development. It would be great to see that be 100% affordable, and affordable at a lower income rate than a lot of other, you know, part of the problem with the housing affordability is how do we define affordable?
What does that look like?
Exactly. And so we want to see affordable housing for families, right? Because that's really who needs it most in Pilsen. We've got multi-generational families that if you're building studio apartments and one bedrooms, that's not going to cut it.
I've been there for years. You've been a lifelong resident, correct?
My family, lifelong Pilsen, lifelong Westtown. My dad's side's Pilsen. My mom's side's Westtown.
So you're passionate about that neighborhood.
Well, I grew up in the city my entire life. My aunt used to have a restaurant on Blue Island 18th, BDS de Patitlán, and they were actually the cover of the phone book in 1981 or 82. I have a photo of it, but I'll send it over
to you. Interesting. And Claudia, you were at last week's community conversation about residents who would like to see El Paseo. What do you want to see happen with this project?
Yes, we have nothing right now. We don't have the green spaces we need. So we really need more green spaces. But the thing that worries me is that we need more green spaces to preserve of the monarch butterfly, but also we need to preserve our families in the neighborhood. And that's exactly what I'm worried about. How are we going to preserve the species by creating more green spaces, but also humans? I know a lot of families that they have left the neighborhood, and some of them, they want to come back, but there is no coming back. Unfortunately, the rent is, the mortgage, the property taxes, everything is going up. I'm so worried because I have two children, and our house is a butterfly sanctuary in Pilsen in front of the Mexican Museum, an orange house. It was painted by Hector Duarte. He's a muralist.
So you're excited about the trail, but also there's concerns.
Yes, I'm so excited. I'm pro green spaces, pro monarch butterfly, pro everything. But I'm also concerned about the families, especially families with children, especially elderly people are losing their house.
That they're able to stay there. Winifred, something that many residents don't want is a bike-specific trail. Why?
Because bike lanes have basically been understood as gentrification lanes, right? That bike lanes have been built initially by the city in very specific areas with a very specific demographic that doesn't look like people in Pilsen. So there's this real concern that bike lanes have become a tool of gentrification and that they could quite literally connect Pilsen with other infrastructure, again, like the 606 that has led to displacement. So I think there's been more concern about kind of what the environmental improvement that can be here rather than sort of amenities like a bike lane, which again can be a great thing, but just has been representative of the kind of change that people want to avoid in Pilsen. And of course, gentrification is in Pilsen, right? And where El Paseo is the most gentrified section of the neighborhood. So it's there's a reason for concern.
Well, we'll have to see what happens. Thank you all for your input.
Thank you so much for having
us.
Up next, the history of DIBS, Chicago's parking spot saving tradition. Well, we finally saw the first snow of the season today. And with snow in Chicago comes parking headaches, which means the return of DIBS. But what exactly is DIBS? When did it start? And is it legal? Those are among the questions we take on in the latest edition of our Emmy Award-winning series, WTTW News Explains. Here's Erica Gunderson.
Every winter, Chicago stands divided around a practice commonly known as DIBS, when car owners use janky household objects to reserve their precious, shoveled-out parking spaces. The idea behind DIBS is that digging your car out from the snow earns you exclusive rights to the spot. And should you decide to flout DIBS and park in a space someone else has marked with a folding chair, dubiously acquired traffic cones, or a late Georgian Heppel-White sideboard, there's an implicit threat that your car will pay the price.
Step away.
So how did DIBS begin? Well, Chicago is among a handful of American cities that have the conditions to create a perfect storm for winter parking. High car ownership, a dense urban environment, and a snowy climate. Historic snowfalls in 1967 and 1979 were so catastrophic to Chicago's streets and shovelers' backs that folks began defending their spots with whatever junk was handy. Since then, hauling out the old milk crates or patio furniture after a hefty snowfall has become more or less standard practice in Chicago, much to the chagrin of others who find the practice petty and a little unneighborly. Though we're the biggest city to call DIBS, we're not the only one. In Pittsburgh, it's known as the Pittsburgh parking chair. They also do it in Boston, but they probably call it the parking chair. And if the term DIBS, which Chicago Tribune columnist John Cass coined in 1999, isn't cute enough for you, in Philadelphia, they call it savesies. Bottom line, is DIBS legal in Chicago? Come on, it's not. Of course it's not. You know it's not. But when Mayor Richard M. Daley was asked his thoughts on DIBS in 2001, he echoed the feelings of many Chicagoans.
If someone spends all their time digging that car out, do not drive into that spot.
So consider that fair warning, Chicago. Until a city leader has enough snowballs to enforce a no-dibs policy, park in somebody else's dib spot at your own risk.
And visit our website for more in the WTTW News Explained series. And I actually grew up with my family doing dibs, and there was this whole respectful tradition that if you shoveled your snow, it was your spot and you could put your chairs there. But I know, different times. And that's our show for this Thursday night. If you're looking for a backstory on the biggest news of the day, sign up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicago, and you can sign up at WTTW.com/newsletter. And join us tomorrow night at 5:37 and 10 for the weekend review. Now, from all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe. Buenas noches.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to recognize its 20 attorneys recognized in the 2025 edition of the Best Lawyers in America.